I'm calling the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from the Air Force. There's no one that can...
I'm calling the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack.
Rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm
yo. And welcome back to the Fix Sports Podcast, which is the realest, blackest and funniest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. I'm coming straight from the south, going down. Audio Shop Talk brought to you right in your ear hole by yours truly, Joseph Ward, right here on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. The greatest, bestest, most prolific this sports podcast you have ever heard. Hey, man, and we talk about this how we talk about this. We like to talk about the news, the headlines, and the things that surround the sports. We get into it a little bit. We do a little analyzation, but we like to talk about the things that are around the sport, the headlines, the news, the stories, because that shit be fun. And we keep it funky, and we keep it real, and we going to throw this thing on your grandma's grill. Hey, really going down in the south. You heard me, man? Welcome back to another episode of the Fix Sports Podcast. Apologize for not having an episode last week. A lot of stuff was happening. A lot of stuff. And I want to make sure I give y'all a quality product. And last week wasn't conducive enough for me to give y'all a quality product. So I'm back, verse 2, and you know me. Ain't no story, you die slowly. You heard me? And if you don't know what I'm talking about, Pastor Troy. You heard me? Hey, man, it's been pretty eventful last 2 weeks. Let me get into our sponsor. So this brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants, and On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go. The stories of the sung unsung heroes, our stories from our perspectives at your fingertips, right? So all the historical black heroes from throughout the world that you didn't learn about in school or any other time in life, you don't learn no more on the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants give that information through the African History book series, the On the Shoulders of Giants book series, the On the Shoulders of Giants blog, the On the Shoulders of Giants African History curriculum app, the On the Shoulders of Giants online course, which is no longer on Patreon, but on the website, www.ontheshoulders1.com. So it's the pre-sale of the relaunch of the online course, because the online course has been revamped and updated. So it's the pre-sale of the relaunch of the online course that's going on right now on the website. They're On the Shoulders of Giants. There's an On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization. You can also get face-to-face live, face-to-face classes, educational sessions, virtual educational sessions, all these things is going on. Well, On the Shoulders of Giants can be there giving you the information. You can get it taught directly from On the Shoulders of Giants, so you can learn through their products. And today is the last day. It's Monday. Today is the last day. It's Cyber Monday of the Black Friday sale, where you get 60% off of all items. All three volumes of their books, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volumes 1, North America, Volume 2, Central America, Volume 3, South America. On the Shoulders of Giants face mask, they now have face masks for you. So On the Shoulders of Giants mask, as well as the pre-sale of the relaunch of the online course, or the module 1 of the online course. Make sure you check it out. 60% off on everything. www.ontheshouldersone.com, your home for African history. All right. We're finna get this thing off right. Yeah, man, so like I was saying last week, there's a lot going on, but I want to make sure I give y'all some good news, give y'all a quality product rather. So, you know, I was laughing as the intro was playing because it's Mike Tyson. And, you know, Mike Tyson and Roy Jones happened this past weekend. So, you know, we got to go ahead and get up in that, because bring me out for a piece of that phone. So, what we talk about today, Willie? I'm gonna tell you what we talking about today. I know y'all like this nigga all over the place. I am, because I'm kind of excited and I'm trying to think, but I'm not thinking, but I'm kind of excited, but I'm back. So here it go. But let me quit bullshitting and give y'all the rundown on what we talking about today. All right, so HBCU Spotlight, former FAMU stars, last name Coleman, Alexander, Nunley, and Vertuno, they received lifetime football honors. So, HBCU news is George Knock, who was a former running back at Morgan State University and an acclaimed artist and sculptor. He died at the age of 74, but we're going to learn about him. And that boy Prime over there at Jackson State, steady pulling talent. So there's a lineman from Missouri who was transferring from Missouri to Jackson State, and there's also a linebacker from USC who's transferring to Jackson State. But we're going to also focus on this lineman, and I'll give y'all an update on the linebacker from USC as well. But you can find that on in my The Fix Sports Podcast Facebook group. You can find the information about that linebacker from USC going to Jackson State. So, like I told y'all last time, it's prime time. We know he got a direct link to the NFL, so people going to go there because they like, well, prime time can help me get to the league. So, we're going to also, after we get through our HBCU Spotlight, HBCU News, we're going to get into what happened with Mike Tyson and Roy Jones, as well as Nate Robinson got knocked out, too. Of course, Nate Robinson is the joke of the world right now because he got knocked out. I ain't like the guy boxer, but all right. But we're going to get into all that happened on Saturday night. Then we're going to get into NBA free agency. So far, winners and losers, different things happening, where people went, to give you an update on that. Talk about that All Black officiating crew that officiated what that was, the Monday night game. So we're going to talk about that, and because it was first time in NFL history, so we're going to get into that. One of my favorite women's basketball players, Teresa Weatherspoon, she has been elevated to a full-time coaching position with the New Orleans Pelicans. So, you know, I'm always in support of women being able to get their shine on. I got to take a weekly rant back for former New York Giants cornerback DeAndre Baker. Because if you remember weeks, months ago, Baker and another guy was accused and arrested and things for robbing people after a car game, a dice game. But now they saying, more information came out, now they saying, but it was lied on. So we got to take that weekly rant back and give y'all the real information, right? Then I'm going to give you an update on the winners and losers from this past week in college football, give you an update from what happened in the NFL, and then my weekly rant. It's a strange one. It's not strange, but it's strange. So, and it's not at Ryan Clark. It's not at Ryan Clark. Ryan Clark, the headline is Ryan Clark deletes inappropriate tweet about minor after trying to make a football joke. And I'm going to tease you a bit. I'm going to read the tweet, and then I'm going to start from the top and come all the way back. But the tweet is, dang, Darren Walker was as wide open as a 16-year-old in love and dropped that thing. Had to be thinking about his TD celebration. That's the tweet. The internet went crazy. So we're going to get into all of that. But first, we got to start this thing off right with that HBCU spotlight. HBCU Spotlight, really going down, one of my favorite parts of this show, the energy and excitement, because I love black folk too. We gotta put ourselves in the spotlight. So former FAMU stars Coleman, these are the last names, Coleman, Alexander, Nunley, and Vertuno received Lifetime Football Award offers. Well, what they did, Willie? Balled out. Oh, shoot. Hit the wrong button. Okay. Former Florida A&M punter Greg Coleman, wide receivers Ray Alexander and Jaquay Nunley, along with kicker James Vertuno, were recently honored for their outstanding achievements on the football field. Coleman was selected for enshrinement in the Black College Football Hall of Fame. The class of 2021 induction ceremony takes place on June 19th at the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta. And Jaquay Nunley better be there, too. Alexander Nunley and Vertuno were chosen as members of the Mid-Eastern Athletic All-Time Team, but Jaquay Nunley should be a part of the Black College Football Hall of Fame. Who has better numbers than him? Are there two wide receivers in HBCU history who have better numbers than Jaquay? That's what I want to know. But anyway, so Alexander Nunley and Vertuno are members of the Mid-Eastern Athletic All-Time Team. So in this, the 50th celebration, your 50th anniversary celebration of the MEAC All-Time Team. These Rattlers are all worth of praises, FAMU Sports Hall of Fame Chairman Alvin Holland said. This is so great for Greg. He was one of the first All-American punters in the NFL. He is a class gentleman all the way around. Ray Alexander, what he did was outstanding. We were more of an option team. He was great because of his speed and leaping ability. Nunley set many records with the Rat Boys in the Gulf Coast offense. Vertuno was very clutch. He had a memorable game winner against Georgia Southern in Jacksonville. As a collegiate star, Coleman played for the Rattlers from 1972 to 75. He was picked by the Cincinnati Bengals in the 14th round of the 1976 NFL Draft. His career spanned 12 seasons with the Cleveland Browns and Minnesota Vikings before retiring in Washington in 1988. Coleman's best years were with the Vikings. He earned the nickname Coffin Corner due to his ability to pin teams near the end zone with his sailing kicks. In the year 2000, Coleman was named to the Minnesota Vikings 40th anniversary team. That's one time. All right, Coleman, I see you. The legendary punter was enshrined in the FAMU Sports Hall of Fame in 1985. Presently, he works as a sideline reporter on the radio covering for the Vikings and KFAN. His cousin, Vince Coleman, played Major League. I don't know why they're talking about his cousin. Okay, Alexander played under head coach Rudy Hubbard from 1980 to 83. He was a three-time first-team All-MEAC selection from 81 to 83. Alexander won MEAC Offensive Player of the Year in 83 after tallying 57 receptions for 1,079 yards and 9 touchdowns. After college, he played one season with the Denver Broncos in 1984, From there, Alexander split time over the next decade in the CFL and NFL. The first of his college honors was being inducted into the FAMU Sports Hall of Fame in 1994. Alexander was enshrined in the MEAC Sports Hall of Fame in 1995. Jaquay Nunnally. And I actually saw Jaquay Nunnally play live. And this is around the same time, around 98-99, when FSU was winning champ, like around that 99 season. And FSU had their receivers, and FAMU had the Rat Boys. And the question in Tallahassee was, which receiving corps was better? For me, it was the Rat Boys. It was the Rat Boys. Now, Nunnally was a key figure in the most prolific era of Rattler football. He was one of the Rat Boys on the Billy Joe's Gulf Coast offense in the mid to late 1990s. During the NCAA record-breaking 1998 season, he led the team with 109 receptions for 1,504 yards. His name and numbers are still referenced as the benchmark for present-day FAMU wide receivers. Nunnally first team All-MEAC all four seasons from 97 through 2000 with the Rattlers. He was also the Rookie of the Year in 1997. The Miami native was enshrined in the FAMU Sports Hall of Fame in 2009 and MEAC Sports Hall of Fame in 2010. And Nunnally broke Jerry Rice's record for all-time receptions. I think it was the receptions and yards, but I know he broke Jerry Rice's record for all-time receptions. So when Jaquay Nunnally ended college football and come to black college football, and I think just college football, he was at the top as far as receptions. So he set records, NCAA records. Okay, so Fortuno, a Tallahassee native who attended Florida High, was named, and I know our new buddy, it was named first team All-MEAC as a kicker from 1988 to 1990. It was also a two-time All-American in college. The clutch kicker led the team in scoring in three of his four seasons. Fortuno posted a career-high 71 points in the MEAC season of 1990. His overall totals include 113 of 123 on extra points and 39 of 56 on field goals. He currently works as a reporter over the Texas Longhorns for the Associated Press. Players for the MEAC anniversary team were voted by fans, media representatives, and sports information directors. One time for Greg Coleman, Ray Alexander, Jaquay Nunnally, and James Vertuno. Y'all put your hands together for these MEAC legends, baby. FAMU legends, these MEAC legends, these black college football legends. Yay, yay! Put your hands together. Come on. Y'all put your hands together. Come on. I need someone, somebody to come and help me turn my life around. One more time for those gentlemen. Well deserved. But I'm telling you, if you did not have a chance to see Jaquay Nunnally play, sorry for you. I got a chance to watch Jaquay Nunnally on one side and Peter Ward on the other side. These boys are playing at the same time. Jaquay Nunnally and Peter Ward in Tallahassee in college. Playing receiver at the same time, ripping it up. Oh, man. So, in HBCU news, we're going to recognize George Knott. He was a running back for Morgan State and an acclaimed artist and sculptor. So, as the oldest child among several sisters growing up in Philadelphia, George Knott was responsible for keeping them occupied while their mother worked. So every Sunday afternoon, he shepherded his sisters down to the Philadelphia Zoo to watch zookeepers feed the big cats. That was our normal Sundays after church, younger sister Linda Lowe recalled Monday. When a lot of people would go to the movies, our best place to go was with George to the zoo. I will never forget the times when we would always get there in time for the feeding of the lions. At that time, there were benches where folks could sit on the bleachers, and you would sit there, and the animal handlers would open the gates up and start throwing meat to the tigers and lions, and George would just sit there mesmerized. He would tell us, just watch, just watch. Mr. Knott, who starred as a running back at Morgan State University and later played four seasons in the NFL before becoming an acclaimed artist and sculptor. He passed on November 22nd of complications associated with coronavirus at East Medical Center in Snellville, Georgia. Damn. Mr. Knott was instrumental in the creation of the university's Legends Plaza and a six-foot bronze statue of the late Bears coaches Edward P. Eddie Hurt and Earl C. Papa Bear Banks. Mr. Knott charged the school for only the cost of the materials and the statues, according to Morgan State's president, Dr. David Wilson. George was a man of so many talents, and he loved Morgan State unconditionally, Dr. Wilson said. He was affable and always saw the humor in many things. I never saw him where he exuded stress or even worry. I like to think that his second passion beyond football, art, played a role in that. Morgan had lost an incredible son. Mr. Knott was the first of nine children born and raised in Philadelphia by Georgia Knott, an activist and homemaker. Mr. Knott's passion for art developed at an early age, catching the attention of nuns who worked at the Catholic daycare where he was enrolled as a child. When he turned seven, his mother brought him some clay. She noticed that he always liked to do things with his hands. Ms. Lowe said from her home in Sharon Hill, Pennsylvania. So she gave him the clay, and from that point on, his career in sculpture got started. He was self-taught, so everything he made was a natural gift. Mr. Knott didn't pick up a football until high school. Before then, he ran sprints and threw the javelin and track and field, played basketball, and even considered dabbling in boxing. George just had the perfect body at 15 that people used to think that he was our father. Mr. Lowe said with a laugh, he was just that strong. Mr. Knott began attending Morgan State in 1964, and after redshirting as a freshman, he started playing in 1965. That year, he returned a punt for 45 yards for a touchdown to win against Florida A&M. Come on, fam. How you lose to Morgan State? I don't care who they had, but they lost to Florida A&M in the Orange Blossom Classic for a mythical Black College National Championship. In his senior year in 1969, Mr. Knott rushed for 87 yards to help the Bears edge Grambling 9-7. In the first game played at Yankee Stadium between two historically Black colleges. When he graduated with his bachelor's degree in psychology, Mr. Knott was an All-American honorable mention and a two-time Central Intercollegiate Athletic Association first-team selection. He was very good because he was small and had a low center of gravity, recalled George Johnson, another Morgan State running back who was 2 years older than Knott. He was like a tank, and it was very hard to get down. So, it's a long, pretty long article. I'm not going to read the whole article because of time, but Mr. George Knott, definitely want to give you a moment of silence. All right, and then y'all put your hands together for the credible life of Mr. George Knott. Do that thing. Do that thing. Let's talk about Deion Sanders. So Deion is snatching up talent like we talked about last time. Direct link to the NFL because it's Deion, right? So he has another SEC transfer to come come to Jackson State. So former Missouri offensive tackle Daylon Spencer announced his intention to transfer to Jackson State on Thursday afternoon. He did it via a video on Twitter with a video featuring clips from the Sonic Boom of the South. Spencer is the second former FBS offensive lineman to commit to Jackson State this week. Jackson State might have a hell of a line. Former Florida International University offensive tackle Maljan Jor announced he would be transferring earlier this week, like Jor Spencer Hales from Mississippi. He was a 3-year star recruit in the 2020 class out of Madison Central. He's already seen the field as a true freshman, filling in as a starter against South Carolina in October. However, he was suspended for the first half of the South Carolina contest for his involvement in the halftime fight against the Gators. He didn't travel with the team to South Carolina because of COVID-19 protocol. The FBS prospect commits keep coming for Deion Sanders in Jackson State. Spencer's the second player to do so in less than 24 hours. See, now they're talking about USC's Abdul Malik, which I was wanted to make sure I give you information about. Abdul Malik, and I pulled it up on my computer. So Abdul Malik McClain has also transferred to Jackson State. And he's from Atlanta. So, just, you know, Jackson State already picked up FSU wide receiver Isaiah Bolden, former Tennessee linebacker Niles Gaddy, and he got his son. He has a defensive back from Mississippi State, Tavarius Elmans. So we got Abdul Malik McClain transferring from USC to Jackson State. It says the Atlanta native played at USC alongside his brother Munyur McClain. Munyur was suspended earlier this season, however, after a federal probe alleging unemployment fraud was revealed. Abdul Malik has not been subpoenaed like the other USC players, according to the USC Times. I don't care about none of that. And 2 months since Sanders was named head coach, several former FBS players have decided to join the party. So Abdul Malik redshirted in 2018, getting on the field for the first time in 2019. He had 2 sacks for minus 11 yards in his career while appearing in 7 games that season. He was expected to be a big part of USC defense in 2020. So, again, somebody who has Pac-12 big-time SEC playing experience who's going to be coming to Jackson State, and I imagine he'll be a starting linebacker. So, look for Jackson State to make some noise, man. Look for Jackson State to make the noise. But guess what? The folk down here in Tallahassee, we got to see it. We got to see it. You got to bring it, Deion. You're going to have to bring that thing. But shout out to you for getting these players. And I told y'all, man, if Deion Sanders wins, that will open up the floodgates for more people playing, for more top black high school football players choosing HBCUs over the white schools. All right. So let's get into this. Let's get into it. So Mike Tyson, Roy Jones, and Nate Robinson got knocked out. Let me Google this real quick. Nate Robinson boxing. It's Nate got his ass whooped. So the undercard for Mike Tyson and Roy Jones was Nate Robinson and Jake Paul. And if I am, my memory serves me correct, Jake Paul has brief experience in boxing, more than Nate Robinson. But neither Nate Robinson nor Jake Paul are like boxes, but it's Nate Robinson. I guess people expected Nate Robinson to win because he was black, right? But Nate Robinson got his ass knocked out, right? And Nate Robinson is like the joke of the world right now. I mean, you know, it's boxing, like it's supposed to happen. Like, I guess because it's Nate Robinson and he's a basketball, it was an exhibition boxing match. And there might have been a whole lot of shit talking before the fight. I don't know. I wasn't keeping up with Jake Paul and Nate Robinson like that. But I do know the internet was busting off yesterday, trolling Nate Robinson. So Nate Robinson will be a punchline, literally, for a while because he got knocked out. And so you see all type of tweets. Snoop Dogg was clowning. Snoop was one of the commentators for the fight. And for the broadcast, he was clowning. So, yeah. I mean, but I don't really get the jokes. I mean, it's Nate Robinson, the big K. He's not a boxer. He's not a boxer. Jake Paul, I don't know who the hell Jake Paul is. like that. But from my understanding of what I've heard before, when I was talking about this a while ago, Jake Paul had boxing experience. Let's see. Let's look up Jake Paul. It says Jake Paul boxing record. Let me see this. Okay, so that was Jake Paul's. So Jake Paul has had two fights. Has had two fights as a boxer. Nate Robinson has had none. Neither one of them really know how to fight, but Jake Paul know how to fight as a boxer better than Nate Robinson. Nate Robinson is a basketball player. He got knocked the fuck out. All right. But anyway, moving on to Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson and Roy Jones. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to murderize him. So basically, the Tyson-Roy Jones fight ended up as a draw. It ended up as a draw, and I think that's the way people wanted it to be. A lot of people expected Mike Tyson to come in and knock Roy Jones' ass out. Stephen A. Smith was even on, went as far as being on ESPN talking about he fears for Roy Jones' life. Stephen A. Smith has a chance, has a tendency to be extra dramatic. I think Roy Jones' life is in danger. He didn't say exactly like that. Mike Tyson could kill him. Mike Tyson could smack. When I was listening to it, Stephen, I was like, you expect old ass Mike Tyson to kill Roy Jones? Like, Roy Jones don't have no skill. You expect Mike Tyson to kill Roy Jones, bruh? Nah, that's not going to happen. So, basically, if you didn't see it, it's on the internet. But it was an old man fight. It was an old version of Roy Jones versus an old version of Mike Tyson that ended in a draw. And it was what? 8 minute. It was 8 2-minute rounds, right? So, I saw some of it. My broadcast was messing up a bit, so I saw some of it, and it looked like a straight up old man fight. So let me read some of this. Ahead of Saturday's exhibition fight between boxing legends Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr., it was impossible to predict what would happen in the ring. At a combined 105 years of age, and with uncertainty over the rules ahead of the event, an already unpredictable situation felt harder to figure out. But once the men got in the ring, they went as hard as could be asked for over 8 2-minute rounds, leading to a split draw on the WBC-assigned judges' scorecards. The fight was a little rough around the edges, with neither man committing to a true volume of strikes. Neither seemed to throw more than two punches at a time before ending up in the clinch to be broken up by referee Ray Caron. Right, that was slow dancing the whole night, right? Tyson occasionally landed his trademark left hook at a distance while Jones showed flashes of his old self with no-look jabs and showboating the boot. Tyson seemed to pile up most of the early rounds, landing the cleaner punches and muscling Jones in the clinch. Jones was the most visibly fatigued man in the corner. Yeah, Roy Jones was tired in the bitch between rounds, but he continued to try to gut out the fight, turn up his volume in the late rounds. This despite Tyson being far more removed from his time as a professional fighter. And then let's just be real. They made the draw. Tyson may have technically won the fight, landed more because you win by landing punches, whoever landed the most punches. So Tyson may have done that, but they made it a draw. It's an exhibition fight. They made it a draw. So Jones's late work served to score him enough late round to earn the win on one scorecard and a draw on another. With Tyson winning the third scorecard, the fight was left at somewhat an unsatisfying draw, as most people pretty much wanted Mike Tyson to knock Roy Jones' ass out. Right. So while Mike Tyson said he was happy with the result, Jones was less thrilled, saying after the fight, "I wear draws. I don't do draws." Well, you're doing a draw today, and you're wearing them, Biff. And that's funny, though. I wear draws. I don't do draws. I could just imagine Roy Jones saying, "Oh, no. You know, I wear draws. I don't do draws." After the fight, Tyson told interviewer Jim Gray that he planned to move forward fighting more exhibitions and even seemed interested in running it back with Jones. I'm used to doing it for 3 minutes, Tyson said of the rounds. Sometimes that 2 minutes felt like 3 minutes. I'm happy I got this under my belt to keep doing this and go further. Jones was less committed to fighting again, stating simply that it was hard to say. So they're saying Tyson didn't shut down any idea of fighting back, but the Nate Robinson Jake Paul fight was more entertaining because Nate Robinson got his ass knocked out, but of course this was the better overall fight. So through 8 rounds, Tyson won round 1, 2, 4, and 5, and Roy won rounds 3, 6, 7, and 8. So it's a draw. So that's the result of the long-awaited wait for Roy Jones and Mike Tyson for the exhibition fight at the ages of 51 and 54, fighting, which probably one of the biggest boxing draws of the year. Damn boxing. Damn. Just think about that for the state of the sport of boxing. That one of the biggest draws of the year for your sport, Corona or not, biggest draws of the year is Mike Tyson and Roy Jones. Damn. And Nate Robinson got knocked out, but it's all good. All right, man, let's talk some basketball, baby, like Curtis Blow. I know some of y'all people might be like, what are you talking about? If you've seen the movie The Wood, I'm talking about basketball, baby, like Curtis Blow, because, you know, we playing basketball. Right, so, man, keep up with the times. If you don't know, keep up with the times, man. Google it. All right, so NBA free agency is happening. A lot of things have happened. People have moved around. Teams have got better. Teams have gotten worse. Like, what the hell is going on? Look like everybody's chasing the Lakers. That's what it look like. Do y'all hear my stomach rumbling? My stomach growling like a motherfucker. I'm hungrier than a bitch, but I got to finish this. But it seems like everybody's chasing the Lakers now because the Lakers made some great, great offseason. I mean, yeah, offseason moves to improve their roster. So the Lakers actually got better as a team who just won the NBA championship. They got better. So so we got Bogdanovich, who joined the Hawks, who won Hassan Whiteside, signed with the Kings. So let me read this. So the condensed 2020 NBA offseason is underway, and many of the top free agents are off the board, including the Charlotte Bound, Gordon Hayward, and returning Raptor Fred VanVleet, both of whom reached agreements on Saturday. Two more big names found new homes, where Marc Gasol signed the Lakers and Aaron Baines joined the Raptors to replace Marc Gasol. Also, Brandon Ingram re-signed with the Pelicans to a max deal, deserved. Now, while most of the stars have signed at this point, there's still plenty of players available who might be good free agents to be able to pick up. But let's talk. This will be a list of, well, damn, they are a list of 100 people. I ain't finna go through all 100 people, but I will stand out shit that people care about. So Anthony Davis, unrestricted free agent, staying for the Lakers. Brandon Ingram agrees to a 5-year, $158 million deal to stay with the Pelicans. VanVleet, 4 years, $85 million, stay with the Raptors. Gordon Hayward, going from Boston to Charlotte, 4 years, $120 million. I wouldn't have paid that. Jordan, Michael Jordan, you crazy as hell. You crazy as hell to pay Gordon Hayward $120 million over 4 years. Gordon Hayward has to prove. Gordon, I would have signed, but not for that. Not for that. You overpaid for Gordon Hayward, bro. That's what it looked like. And what it looked like? It looked like you overpaid for Gordon Hayward because Gordon Hayward really ain't been balling since his injury. So, you know. All right, so Bogdan, like I said, Bogdan Bogdanovich going to the Raptors, going to the Hawks, 4 years, $72 million. Christian Wood going from the Pistons to the Rockets, 3 years, $41 million. Joe Harris going staying with the Nets, 4 years, $75 million. Gallinari going from the Thunder to the Hawks on a 3 year, $61.5 million deal. The Dragon, Gordon Dragic, staying in Miami, 2 year, $37 million. Damn, I should have played basketball. Jeremy Grant is going from the Nuggets to the Pistons for 3 years, $60 million. He's going from winning to losing. Montrezl Harrell going from the Clippers to the Lakers, 2 years, $19 million. Marcus Morris is staying in L.A., the Morris twins. So Marcus staying in L.A. for 4 years, $64 million. Serge Ibaka going from the Raptors to the Clippers, 2 year, $19 million. Mark Gasol going from the Raptors to the Lakers, 2 year, $5.3 million. That's going to be big on the Raptors losing their front line like that with Gasol and Ibaka, because I believe Gasol and Ibaka is better than who they're going to be replacing that with. So that might impact the Raptors' is continued success in the East. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope staying with the Lakers. He got $3 or $40 million extension. Paul Millsap staying with the Nuggets. 1 year, $10 million. Like I said, Aaron Baines going from the Suns to the Raptors. 2 year, $14 million. Tristan Thompson going from Cleveland to Boston. 2 year, $19 million deal. If Tristan Thompson got that Kardashian out of the system, he may be worth something. Jay Crowder going from the Heat to the Suns. That's going to be pretty good, too, because the Suns look like they trying to come up and do something, right? Who else that we care about? Wesley Matthews going from the Bucks to the Lakers, 1 year, $3.6 million. Rajon Rondo going from the Lakers to the Hawks for 2 years, $15 million. Who else do we care about? Your boy Jeff Green going to the Nets. DJ Augustine going to the Bucks. Avery Bradley, he went from the Heat to the Lakers. Now he's going back to the Heat, 2 year, $11 million. Michael Carter Williams staying with the Magic. And Dwight Howard left the Lakers, went to 76ers. Jeff Teague going to Boston from Atlanta. Nerlens Noel going from the Thunder to the New York Knicks. That's about all who we care about. Markieff Morris, the other twin, staying in L.A. So both the Morris twins are staying in L.A. One is staying with the Clippers, one is staying with the Lakers. DeMarcus Cousins going to the Raptors, like I said. So, yeah, so that's some of the latest on NBA free agency moves that we actually care about. So, yeah. So that's what's going on in the NBA. All right, so this past Monday, let's switch gears. Switch back to the NFL. Let's talk race relations in history, right? This past Monday in the year 2020, after over 75 years of playing football, the NFL finally had its first all-black officiating crew. And you saw how I set that up, because the NFL full of shit. After over 75 years of playing ball, finally had an all-black officiating crew. And I think Mike Carey was the head official, I believe. Oh, no. Jerome Boger led the crew. But shout out to Mike Carey anyway. So, an all-black officiating crew worked an NFL game for the first time in league history when the Rams and the Bucks Monday Night Football, and the Bucks lost. Referee Jerome Boger led the crew, which also included umpire Barry Anderson, down judge Julian Mapp, line judge Carl Johnson, side judge Dale Shaw, field judge Anthony Jeffries, and back judge Greg Steed. One time for all y'all gentlemen, and fuck the NFL. Because it took y'all that long to have an all-black officiating crew? Really? all them black referees you got, it really took this long? Oh, yeah, that's right, because George Floyd died and shit. Who knows how America would continue to treat black people if George Floyd wouldn't have got killed? If protests wouldn't have broke out, if little white kids wouldn't have acted like they cared for a little bit, who knows where America would be, right? When the NFL announced the crew was being assembled last week, League Executive Vice President of Football Operations Troy Vincent hailed the move, a testament to the countless and immeasurable contributions of black officials to the game, their exemplary performance, and to the power of inclusion that this landmark... Man, shut your bitch ass up, Troy Vincent. Man, Troy Vincent, stop being the Negro whisperer. Troy Vincent, stop it. Stop it. The NFL ain't trying... The NFL don't give a fuck about race relations or improving anything. Stop it. Why did it take this long? If the NFL really cared about pushing the game forward or pushing race relations forward, first of all, this wouldn't even been an issue. Nobody would have cared. If the NFL really cared about that, nobody would have cared that an all-black officiating crew was put together, because that would have been normal, Troy Vincent. That would have been normal. If an all-black, if we have to sensationalize, if we have to sensationalize an all-black officiating crew, that's because the status quo hasn't changed. That's because politics as usual is what's happening. The NFL is just trying, this is the NFL throwing a bone. When will it happen again? Where all black officiating crews happen on a regular basis, because all white officiating crews happen on a regular basis. They happen on a regular basis. So will this happen on a regular basis? And in the same league who has to incentivize the Rooney Rule, and in the same league who says that they stand with black America, who the commissioner says, I was wrong about Colin Kaepernick, but yet Colin Kaepernick is still not in the NFL. Right? The NFL, man. And Troy, first of all, Troy Vincent, stop acting like that, bro. Stop being the Negro who every time something race relations and all these things come up, you got the NFL put you up there to talk, and you'll be the Negro. Everything is fine over here, boss. The white folk treating us all good. We doing good around here. White folk treating us mighty fine. Them some good white folks. They treat me just right. Look at me. Look at me. Look at how they treated me. Them white folk treat me just right. Yeah. Yeah. All right, they treat you just right while they spit on everybody else. Because, yeah, racism is a happening. Racism is in the root of all this. Because, hey, they put together an all-black officiating crew finally. Will it ever happen again? And why the fuck did it take this long to happen? Why did it take this long to happen? Now, I want to celebrate the referees for their accomplishments as referees. We're going to celebrate the referees. But we ain't going to sit and act like the NFL is actually cares about race relations and helping to improve race relations, when we saw how much the NFL played a part. Because the NFL played a great part in showing us that it supports racism and people who are racist. They've been doing that the last 4 or 5 years. So, that's right. George Floyd was killed. So because George Floyd was killed, fuck everybody else who was killed, right? Fuck everybody else who was killed. Ahmaud Arbery, everybody else who was killed before George Floyd and after George Floyd, their deaths don't matter. George Floyd's death is the only death that matters. That's the one death that spurred America into the future to become better. Man, stop it. Don't piss on me and tell me it's raining. That's what the NFL is doing right now. The NFL is pissing on us and telling us it's raining. And you'll be a damn fool if you buy into it. This makes history because it's never happened. So why hasn't it ever happened? Why hasn't this happened before, NFL? Why is this something that's the first time that an all-black NFL crew happens in the year 2020 in a league that keeps trying to put out the perception that it's about racial harmony and racial unity and bringing people together. We need to bring America together. America has never been together. There's never been no racial harmony and unity in America. There's only been racial domination by white people. Now, I just want the NFL to stop pretending. I'm not saying the NFL have to be leaders in race relations. I'm just saying I want the NFL to stop pretending like they're leaders in race relations. Like that bullshit they did with Jay-Z? Where is that? What happened with that with Jay-Z and the social movement? What's the latest in that? What's the outcome in that? The programs that Anquan Boldin and Malcolm Jenkins, they're doing some things. But what they're doing, because that was created to really deal with race relations, to help things, it's not really dealing with race relations. Black people, somebody black is going to be killed by the police today, sadly enough. Now, whether we're going to know about it or not is one story, but somebody black is going to be killed by the police today. Black people are still being killed by the police in numbers. And nothing that Jay-Z has done, nothing the NFL has done, and nothing Anquan Boldin and Malcolm Jenkins has done has changed anything. I do think Malcolm Jenkins and Anquan have good intentions. I do think they have good intentions. I think Anquan has good intentions more so than I think Malcolm Jenkins. I don't know why, but that's just a feeling that I got. I could be wrong. But the road to hell has been paved with good intentions. So let's stop acting like just because the intentions are good, that the outcome is actually good. That's what I got to say about that. All right, so let's move on, man. Let's move on. So Teresa Weatherspoon, if you don't know who Teresa Weatherspoon is, go to YouTube, Teresa Weatherspoon, New York Liberty, baller. She has been elevated to a full-time coaching position within the Pelicans' organization. Organization. I'm sorry. That organization. So, the New Orleans Pelicans announced their coaching staff under Stan Van Gundy on Monday afternoon. That's right, they did rearrange the staff. They gave Stanley the Penguin the job, and he elevated Naismith Hall of Fame and WNBA legend Teresa Weatherspoon to a full-time coaching position. Yay! Yay! Teresa Weatherspoon, or Teaspoon, what they called her. She's 54 years old. She becomes the 8th full-time female assistant coach in the NBA. She joins New Orleans Pelicans' owner organization last as a two-way player development coach who split her time between New Orleans and the team's G League affiliate in Erie, Pennsylvania. Now she'll spend all of her time with the Pelicans. Weatherspoon was a two-time WNBA Defensive Player of the Year, a five-time All-Star, and a four-time second-team selection in her playing career. She was also the women's head coach at Louisiana Tech, her alma mater, from 2009-2014. She led them to a pair of regular season conference titles in 2009 and 2011, and a conference tournament title in 2010. She joined Toronto's Brittany Donaldson, Cleveland's Lindsay Gottlieb, Dallas's Jenny Bucic, San Antonio's Becky Hammon, and Memphis's Sonya Raymond as women who are on the bench assistants in the NBA, while Sacramento's Lindsey Harding and the Los Angeles Clippers' Natalie Koski are full-time player development assistant coaches with their respective franchise. Right. The Pelicans are also bringing in a pair of former NBAers, Corey Brewer and Beno Udrih. Corey Brewer, Florida, to join as player development coaches. Brewer, who actually played 5 games in the bubble. Oh, I don't know who Corey Brewer is there. I might know Corey Brewer. I don't know. I'm being Because let me look this up. Corey Brewer. I think that's the buddy that went to Florida. I mean, I just need to be sure. I just need to make sure. Corey Brewer. Is this? Am I mixing him up? Yeah. Corey Brewer. Yeah. He went to Florida. Yeah. He went to Florida. And, all right. So, Corey Brewer actually played 5 games in the bubble with Sacramento Kings this year. Wraps up a 13-year NBA career to join New Orleans, while Uterick, whose 13-year career ended after playing for Van Gundy in Detroit in 2017. In New Orleans, Witherspoon joins Van Gundy staff that also is bringing in Bob Bayer, Casey Hill. I don't want to care about all that. I want to talk about Teaspoon. So, Teresa Witherspoon, all that other stuff don't matter. Teresa Witherspoon is a full-time coach on the coaching staff for the New Orleans Pelicans, and that's a huge step forward. The NBA is a million times more progressive than the NFL. Now, like I've always told you, the NBA are the Democrats and the NFL are the Republicans. Neither one of them really give a shit about our people. But some of them have more decorum in not giving a shit about our people, right? Let them use you. Let them use you. So I'm going to give a shout out to Miss Teaspoon, Teresa Witherspoon. Give her hand.
She made it.
Congratulations to Teresa Witherspoon. Well deserved. So, this is me, Joseph Ward, taking back a weekly rant. Now, I do tell y'all, I go off the information that I have, and if I'm wrong, and I've been misled, I come back and I admit. So, DeAndre Baker, I apologize. I remove you from all the spirits of the weekly rant that you were in when you were accused and arrested for robbing people at a dice game. Hey. Sound like some fuck shit to me. So let's read. So prosecutors have dropped all charges stemming from an alleged robbery brought against former New York Giants cornerback DeAndre Baker, according to CBS Miami reports. A lawyer representing 3 of the alleged robbery victims has also been charged with extortion, according to the CBS Miami. We might have our rant for next week. Prosecutors said that they were dropping the charges against Baker because witnesses changed their testimony. Oh, bitch-ass witness. So why y'all lying on people, messing up people's lives like that? Why y'all messing up people's lives like that? Because all the information that we had said that Baker and Dunbar messed up, right? So Baker and Seattle Seahawks cornerback Quentin Dunbar attended the party in Miramar, Florida on May 13th, where a fight broke out. Witnesses claimed at the time Baker pulled out a handgun and, along with other men, began robbing other party attendees. He was charged with 4 counts of robbery with a firearm on August 7th. According to court documents obtained by CBS Miami, 3 witnesses recanted their previous sworn statements and instead asserted that they did not get an accurate look at the events as they occurred, that DeAndre Baker was present but not involved in any criminal act, and that they were not robbed or assaulted. Why lie? Why y'all lying on people like that then? Why y'all lying on people like y'all? Know we got these shows and this information. We put the information out that we have access to. And only thing we had access to is y'all fuckboys lie. Why would you lie on buddy like that? Because he's there? Come on, bruh. Come on, man. Bruh, I don't put people in these weekly rants just to put people in these weekly rants. I put people in these weekly rants because they done fucked up, right? But y'all, You all lying on people, bro. That ain't cool. You really going out here lying on this man like that? Oh, no. It wasn't him. I'm sorry. I lied. It wasn't him. He ain't really doing it. He ain't really doing it, but it really wasn't him. Come on, bro. Come on, man. What type of hoe is you, man? You're a grown hoe, too. You're a grown man acting like a hoe. What type of hoe is you?
Hey, I'm going to accuse these boys because they ain't enough fail.
And then the lawyer and everybody trying to extort money out of them? Really? Come on, man. That's some whole shit. Hey, man. DeAndre Baker and Quentin Dunbar, my bad. My bad for my weekly rant. As a man, Joseph Ward, Fixed Sports Podcast, Freedom Train Network, we apologize for putting you guys in our weekly rant under false information obtained by some bitch boys. Well, given by some bitch boys. So, you are from here released from the spirit of the weekly rant, even though I can't take the rant back because it's recorded. But you are thus far released from the spirit of the weekly rant because some fuck boy lied. That's it. Come on, bruh. Come on. And I was going to make it a point to do this story regardless because I try to be a stand-up person. I might not be the best for you, but I try to be a stand-up person, right? And if somebody has been put into this weekly rant by lies, and lies have led to them going to the weekly rant, it need to be addressed. Baker and Dunbar, y'all were lied on. So let's talk about these bitches who lied, right? So attorney William Dean, who represents the three witnesses, allegedly tried to extort. And William Dean, you a whole hoe out here, William Dean. You's a whole hoe out here. So they allegedly tried to extort Baker by having him to pay to recant their testimony. Come on, man. According to the sheriff's investigators, Dean told Baker if he paid each of his clients $226,000, they would either recant their statements or stop cooperating with prosecutors. Man, hey. Well, we're going to take this thing the way it needs to be taken to because I ain't paying these boys no $226,000 a piece. Man, what kind of number is that? Hey, bro, I want $226,000 exactly. What type of number is that? Who come up with that number? So, Baker 23 was waived from the New York Giants on September 8th, just over a month after charges were filed against him. Dunbar was also initially accused of being involved in the robbery, pulling the gun, but prosecutors declined to file criminal charges against the 28-year-old, citing insufficient evidence. Broward State Attorney Mike Sants said at the time. Man, this some hoe-ass shit, man. This some ridiculous hoe-ass shit. So this man's career has been paused. This man's career could possibly be over because some fuckboys lied. That was some broke-ass fuckboys lied, trying to extort money. Three broke-ass witnesses and a broke-ass lawyer trying to extort money out of men who go out and honestly earn their living, but these boys being bitches and trying to extort some money out of somebody because they some lazy bitches. Man, your daddy should have skeeted all y'all. William Dean, your daddy should have skeeted you in a dirty sock. That's where you should have ended up. Your daddy should have skeeted you in a dirty sock or in somebody's booty hole or something. Well, you have no opportunity to become anything other than some skeet. And the three witnesses, bitch ass boy, that's what they name gonna be, bitch ass boy. Come on, man, come on, and do that to another black man. Wow, thank you. Disregard everything else that's going on with racism. We gonna add to your issues by being another burden to you. Even though we black. And then we're going to bring this crack in and try to help us extort money out of you. Man. Damn, I feel bad for Buddy now. I really feel bad for Baker. I really feel bad for him because now all this information come out. Now it comes out. So I'm going to pay attention because I want to see if somebody's going to give Baker a chance because the man was lied on. And you can't be like, well, you got to make better decisions. How the fuck am I supposed to know a bitch going to lie on me and set me up like that? Like, you don't know. Like, you do your best to judge, to be a great judge of character. But at the end of the day, you don't really know if somebody's going to do some fuck shit or not. You don't know. You just do your best to try to be a great, a good judge of character. Put yourself around the best people you can. Like, I don't know if he was or wasn't doing that. But I'm not going to say, well, he need to make better decisions or we choose to have in his life. Bitch, you could marry somebody who fuck around, turn around to be a damn axe murderer. That ain't my job to control somebody else's actions, right? So we're not going to put that on him. I just wish him the best. And I will be looking for more information to make sure we help to clear this man's name. That's the least we could do. All right, man, let's take a little left-hand turn and give you an update on some of these college football actions from this past weekend. And coronavirus is real because it's fucking up a lot of these games. You heard me? I don't even know what week we in. All right, hold on. Let me find my place. Let me find my place so we can... All right, so... So we had... This past week, we had Iowa and Texas. Goddamn, Texas. Texas lost to Iowa State 23-20. Goddamn, Texas. Kyle Ellinger had 298 yards in the touchdown. He had no picks. But goddamn, Texas, how you lose to Iowa State? So Texas lost to Iowa State 23-20. Iowa... Goddamn, both Iowa teams won. Iowa beat Nebraska 26-20. Number 2, Notre Dame continued their winning ways by dropping their nuts on number 19, North Carolina. And Notre Dame is number 2 in the country. So the score was 31-17. And all Notre Dame got to do is just keep winning. Because Notre Dame going to play Clemson. Keep winning, you play Clemson in ACC championship game. You make it to the playoffs. Oregon, number 15, Oregon actually loses to Oregon State 41-38. And Oregon State is unranked, and Oregon is ranked 15th. Number 6, Florida continue their winning ways by beating Kentucky 34-10. Number 23, Oklahoma State beats Texas Tech 50-44. Number 12, Indiana gets a victory over Maryland, like everybody else is, 27-11. Number 20, Coastal Carolina beat Texas State 49-14. Number 8, Northwestern. Ha ha. Ha ha, you Northwestern people. Ha ha. Northwestern lost to Michigan State. Everybody, Michigan State, the one team that been getting Michigan State and Michigan begin trains ran on them by the conference. But Michigan State finally got a stroke in. Finally was able to flip over and get a pump in, right? Started getting the train ran on them. And Michigan State beat Northwestern, number 8 Northwestern. 29-20. And Northwestern's, that was their first loss of the year. They're 5-1. And it's like the people, we knew Northwestern was pretending. We knew Northwestern was pretending. We knew Northwestern didn't really want to be no big dogs. We knew that. They were pretending. So guess what? That's why they hasn't lost to goddamn Michigan State, who everybody been beating. Number 22, Auburn got their asses handed to them by the number 1 team in the nation, Alabama, 42-13. Clemson continued their winning ways, beating Pittsburgh 52-17. Clemson's number 4. Texas A&M is actually ranked number 5 in the nation. And, wow, Florida State. I'm going to say that again for Florida State fans. Florida State University fans, Texas A&M is ranked number 5 in the nation. They have a 6-1 record and are second in the SEC West behind Alabama. Florida State fans, y'all let Jimbo go. Here it is. Jimbo's been way more successful than the Florida State folk. You know, he'll lose one game. People, Jimbo lost a game. He's been way more successful than what's going on at Florida State. Two coaches later, right? And to round things out, because, you know, everybody didn't play Corona and holidays and all this shit, and I hope y'all ate good, but Georgia, number 13, Georgia beat South Carolina 45-16. So that's what happened this past weekend in college football. Quick NFL update. The Rams beat the Bucks 27-24. Jared Goff went 39-51, 376 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks. Your boy Cam Akers from Florida State had 5 carries, 15 yards. Cam Akers, Cam Akers did catch a touchdown as well. Cooper Kupp had 11 receptions for 145 yards. Robert Woods, 12 catches, 130 yards and a touchdown for the Rams, Buccaneers. Brady went 26-48, 216 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. The Bucks running game stuck. And leading receiver Antonio Brown, 8 receptions, 57 yards, no touchdown. Chris Godwin, 7 receptions, 53 yards, touchdown. Mike Evans, 5 receptions, 49 yards and a touchdown. So that's what happened with the Bucks and Rams. I ain't gonna give you. This is not a full NFL update. Recording this a little bit early, so the Texans beat the shit out of the Lions like they were supposed to. Two sorry ass teams, but sorry ass team. One with talent, one just sorry ass team. Texans beat them 41-25, led by that boy Deshaun Watson, who went 17-25, 318 yards and 4 touchdowns. That's all I really care about. So for the Lions, Matthew Stafford went 28-42, 249 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 pick, and another mediocre game, another mediocre existence for Matt Stafford. And the game that really broke it down, made me say, fuck this life. Dallas Cowboys lost to the Washington Footballs again. We done lost to them boys twice this season. Them boys beat us 41-16 in our house. On Thanksgiving, 41-16. Alex Smith went 19-26, 149 yards and a touchdown. Andy Dalton went 25-35. He went bad. 25-35, 215 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 pick. Zeke Elliott, all I got damn fumbling. Stop fumbling, dog. 10 carries, 32 yards. Mark Cooper, 6 catches, 112 yards and a touchdown. This Cowboy shit is horrible, man. I found better talent at the bottom of my toilet. Come on, man. Come on, man. So, just a little small update on what went down in the NFL. Like I said, I'm recording this a bit early, so I don't have all the NFL scores. But that's what happened. That's what happened so far, thus far in the NFL. So we're down to this weekly rant, because it's time. Girl, it's time for this weekly rant. For this weekly rant. For this weekly rant. All right. So this going out to the perverts. So Ryan Clark a couple weeks ago put out a tweet that said, dang, Darren Walker was as wide open as a 16-year-old in love and dropped that thing, meaning he dropped the ball, had to be thinking about his TD celebration. So this article, it starts off with, what was Ryan Clark thinking when he tweeted this? The former NFL safety turned ESPN sports analyst is trying to be funny describing the play from the Broncos Raiders game when he inexplicitly decided to use his 16-year-old being in love to make his point. He has since deleted the tweet. What's wrong with the tweet? What's bad about it? So you're saying because Ryan Clark is a grown man, he can't say anything that has anything to do with a girl under 16. He can't say anything. Is that what you're saying? Because what it sounds like to me is you all are perverts. Randy Oliver, the writer of this article, Randy Oliver, you sound like a pervert to me. You sound like, so Ryan Clark said this, Randy Oliver, what's going on in your life? Well, you read the tweet that says, dang, Darren Walker was as wide open as a 16-year-old in love and dropped that thing. He had to be thinking about his TD celebration. What about you made you read this tweet and have a sexual thought that come to your mind? What was sexual about this tweet? Somebody tell me. Somebody comment and tell me what was sexual about him saying Darren Walker was as wide open as a 16-year-old in love and dropped the thing. What was sexual about that? Guess what? You know what popular expressions is? When somebody's in love, their nose is wide open. They're wide open, meaning that they are in love. They are head over heels. So if he would have said, that's the same thing as saying somebody's head's over heel in love. Being wide, boy, you wide, that girl got you wide open. Means you are greatly in love with this person. That's what that means. So you took that and you took it left to say, to make this a sexual tweet? You sexualized this? Randy Oliver. I'm looking at you. I'm looking at you like you crazy, Randy Oliver, because you found a way to sexualize this. You and everybody else. So there's a tweet that said, ain't no way Ryan Clark really tweeted that. He's Eddie, and his Twitter handle is at DetroitEddie313. What's going on in your mind? So then somebody, big homie, at underscore top flight bug, he said, CTE example number, blah, blah, blah. He's trying to say this is because of CTE. So y'all perverts. Are y'all pedophiles or perverts? Because when I read that tweet, nothing sexual came to my mind. Why? Because I understand what he was saying. You was as open, as vulnerable, and as ready for love, or and as ready to catch that ball as a 16-year-old is for love. But somehow, you perverts, emphasis on pervert, read the tweet and said, well, this has a sexual connotation to it. No, it doesn't. Now, it didn't help that Ryan Clark deleted the tweet. It didn't help that he deleted the tweet. But you want to know how it was such a non-issue and not a deal, not a big deal or a deal at all? If you wouldn't have heard me talking about this, have you heard this story? Have you heard ESPN or anybody say anything to Ryan Clark? Has he gotten in any trouble? Matter of fact, Ryan Clark was on ESPN the next day doing what he do. The next day. Why? Because I checked. And Ryan Clark was on ESPN the next day doing what he do. Nobody had an issue with it. He didn't get in trouble. He didn't get fined. As far as I know, didn't get fined or in trouble. No slaps on the wrist or nothing like that. Because a handful of people saw the tweet. And in your mind, you added a sexual connotation to this tweet about when he used love, he used being vulnerable for love as an analogy of a dude being vulnerable and open to catch the ball, but he dropped it. And you all took that and was like, oh, Ryan Clark, he said something about a 16-year-old girl in love. Okay. Bother me. Make this a big deal when Ryan Clark actually does something wrong. But see, Randy Oliver, I'm going to find out who you is, Randy Oliver, because you are a writer for the Daily Snark since 2012. Yeah, you and the Daily Snark full of shit, Randy Oliver. Come on, bruh. Stop it. Y'all, if you're not good at journalism, just say it. If you're not good at journalism, if you're not good at reporting, you're not good at all this stuff, just say it. But don't try to ruin somebody's career because you're not good at your job, Randy Oliver, and everybody else who got a problem with with the tweet. You a whole pervert. You a whole pervert. If you saw this and you took it as a sexual tweet, you a whole pervert. That says a lot about you. That says a lot about you. Nothing about this tweet was sexual. It didn't help that he took it down. And I kind of understand why he took it down, but it didn't help that he took it down. Because I wouldn't have took it down. I would have left it up there. Why? Because there's no sexual connotations in it. But all you fuck boys and pussy holes out there who saw the tweet, and the first thing come to your, oh, he said something about a 16-year-old girl. It's inappropriate. Fuck out of here. Fuck out of here. You can't sit here and tell me that in this day and time, as an adult, I can't have a conversation and say anything about, if I'm a grown man, if I say anything about a girl who's under 18, that make me a pedophile? That make a man a pedophile for saying something, anything? And not especially in no way sexual, in no way sexual connotations to say something or have a reference or a metaphor with a young woman under the age of 18, that automatically makes that person a pedophile. Man, stop that. Look, I'm not like a lot of y'all sideline motherfuckers who just like to talk about it. I actually do the work when it comes to sexual and domestic violence prevention. I actually do the work. So you're not finna hit, so come here and try to throw something around like this on Ryan Clark like that. For the last 10, 11 years, I've been actually doing the work to help reduce the number of sexual and domestic violence situations that happen within my community. Like real, real work. Not just talking about it, but actually doing real work. So you're not finna, and I'm not sitting trying to act like I'm the overall expert, but I am an expert at this stuff. I'm an expert at this. When it comes to sexual and domestic violence prevention, I'm an expert at that. And what you're not going to do is come from some layman's seat, from some unexpert seat, and try to say that this man made a derogatory statement toward a young girl or about young women or whatever. That's not happening. That's not happening. No, no. Ryan Clark didn't do anything wrong. It's just these trash-ass wannabe journalists and trash-ass people on Twitter who are looking for something to help boost their profile. So Randy Oliver and everybody else on Twitter, Randy Oliver, Who Glove on Twitter, Detroit 8313, Top Flight Bug. Of course, you won't. Fuck all y'all. All y'all, pull y'all bottom lips over your heads and swallow. Because the world would be better without your bullshit. Hey, man, it's my time. Another episode of Fix Sports Podcast. You know how we do. We keep it down. We stay down. We do what we do. And we make it happen. All the way, y'all make sure y'all support your homeboy on Patreon, patreon.com/TheFix. That way you can see these videos. Shout out to all my patrons who are seeing these videos. Hey, man, everything is everything for y'all. Like I said, I apologize for not being around last week, but I'm back. Season 6, Episode 5, really going down in the South. www.freedomtrainradio.com, patreon.com/TheFix. And we got this biatch. We'll see y'all next week, man. And if you don't know, now you know. Glory, glory. Look at that ass.
I am the greatest.
I called the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. there's no one like me. I'm